Welcome, everybody. I'm going to call this meeting for February 11th, 2022 of the House State Government Finance and Election Committee to order. Pursuant to House Rule 10.01, this meeting is being held virtually. I'll have the Mr. Brinks, the committee legislative aide, to take the roll.
Thank you, Chair Nelson.
Chair Nelson present.
Chair Nelson is present. Vice Chair Carlson?
Carlson is present.
Vice Chair Carlson is present. Representative Nash?
Nash present.
Representative Nash is present. Representative Bonner?
Bonner present.
Representative Bonner is present. Representative Drazkowski?
Present.
Representative Drazkowski is present. Representative Elkins?
Elkins is present.
Representative Elkins is present. Representative Greenman?
Present.
Representative Greenman is present. Representative Cleborne?
Cleborne present.
Representative Cleborne is present. Representative Tosnick?
Present.
Representative Tosnick is present. Representative Mason?
Mason present.
Representative Mason is present. Representative New Brindley?
Present.
Representative New Brindley is present. Representative Pawlowski?
Pawlowski present.
Representative Pawlowski is present. Representative Kwan?
Present.
Representative Kwan is present. Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have a quorum.
We have a quorum, so thank you, everybody. Next order of business is approval of the minutes from yesterday's meeting from February 10th. Representative Elkins, did you get a chance to look at the minutes?
I did, Mr. Chair, and I will move their approval.
Motion to approve the minutes from February 10th. If everybody wants to unmute, all in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Minutes have been approved. Thank you, Representative Elkins. We've got four bills on the agenda today. We had a fifth one, House File 608, that the author asked to have it pulled. There needs a little bit more work on it. Some questions need to get answered. So we just got the four bills today, and we'll start with House File 607, Representative Bonner. Representative Bonner, welcome. You're a member of the committee. Do you want to move your bill? And we're going to lay this over for possible inclusion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move HF 607 before the committee.
House File 607 is before the committee. I see you have a A3 amendment, Representative Bonner.
That is correct, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A3. Essentially, it just changes the enactment date.
From 2021 to 2022?
Correct.
Any members questions on the amendment? If not, again, everybody unmute. All in favor of the A3 amendment to put the bill in the order that each author wants, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The ayes have it. The amendment's been adopted. And I misspoke a little bit here. We're laying this bill over because the fiscal note's being revised. And when we get the newer fiscal note, we'll decide then whether we're just going to lay it over for inclusion or possibly move it on as a separate bill. The speaker's been encouraging us to do that, sending separate bills to the floor. Representative Bonner, you want to explain your bill, what it does?
Yes, thank you so much, Mr. Chair. We may debate many things in this room, but there is one point on which I am certain we all agree. Safe, secure, and fair elections are the cornerstone of our democratic process. There's been much conversation about how we evaluate our process to establish three basic things about voters. How do we know they are who they say they are, they live where they say they live, and they are a legally eligible voter? We have heard so much discussion on this and how to best establish these items. But I'm here to tell you that Minnesota has at its fingertips, by far and away, the most reliable, accurate, and trustworthy system to do just that, with one minor tweak to our statute. Better still, We don't need to squander millions of hard-earned taxpayer dollars to create complicated system, train legions of poll workers for once every two-year or once every four-year event. And we don't need to rely on judgment calls from sweet Aunt Ethel in the high school gym. It's called automatic voter registration. A funny name because there is little that is automatic about it. So let's start with the basics. The only thing automatic about this process is that when you go to DVS to get your driver's license, ID card, or permit, you as the voter don't do anything different. The system will automatically start the elaborate checks and balances to verify that you are who you say you are, you live where you say you live, and that you are a legally eligible voter. How does it do that? Let's start with the obvious. Most people go to DVS for the reasons we want to verify. You're going to you're new to the state, it expired, or you moved. DVS has a team of professionals that verify the identity of every person coming through the door. They're masters at this task. 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, 52 weeks a year, not once every 2 to 4 years, as the competing plan would require. But we don't stop there, not by a long shot. The highly trained clerk is only the first layer verifying multiple IDs and documents from a robust set of official documentation as opposed to one with other proposals. But again, verification does not end here. When your record is sent to the counties, it goes through several more layers, matching driver's license numbers, the last four of your social, verifying the accuracy of your address against the ultimate source of truth, the U.S. Postal Service, the gold standard of address verification. And in case you are wondering, we also check that there's no reason why you may not be eligible. Like checking the Department of Corrections, files from other states showing you're registered to vote somewhere else, the Department of Health or Social Security Administration, to be certain you are still walking among us, alive and well. These checks and balances are robust. It's like multi-factor authentication on steroids. And it gives a whole new meaning to trust but verify. Then and only then can a voter be deemed eligible and officially added to the voter list. One last thing. This is America. And while the Constitution guarantees us the right to vote, and I believe it's our duty to vote, no one is ever required to. To that end, should you decide you wish to be removed from AVR, or AVR will send you information to your mailbox with instructions on how to remove yourself. I want to be clear. This is without a doubt the most robust, most accurate, most trustworthy system to verify. You are who you say you are, you live where you say you live, and you are a legally eligible voter. But yet, we can turn on this tool with little or no taxpayer dollars wasted. You heard that right. Not $3 million, no complicated system. All you have to do is vote yes to AVR. And with that, Mr. Chair, we do have the Secretary of State here as well to testify to the bill, and then we can certainly take questions.
I see on my list here we have the Secretary of State as a testifier. Secretary Simon, you have a testimony, or are you here just to answer questions? And if please identify yourself for the record, and you can proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'll be really quick, and thanks for your time and attention. I know you have a lot of bills today. I just want to put an exclamation point on what Representative Bonner said. Since March of 2015, 25 states in the District of Columbia have enacted automatic voter registration. Red states, red governors, blue governors, legislatures of all kinds. And I think the reason for that it is a much more simple, accurate, and secure way of operating a voter registration system. As Representative Bonner said, the title of it, as it's come to be known, is a little unfortunate. There's nothing automatic about it. And it sounds like something that is much more sweeping than it is. As she alluded to, in Minnesota right now, if you take a driver's test, watch the next time you do. You take the iChart test, you fill out a bunch of papers, and there's a piece of paper in front of you that says, check the box if you want to be registered to vote. All this would do functionally is reverse the presumption. Same iChart test, same Division of Vehicle Services office, same everything. And even then, as Representative Bonner said, there's nothing automatic about it. What's automatic is that it starts the process, the multi-pronged, lengthy, multi-step process of verifying that someone is who they say they are and lives where they say they live. So let me just pull out one piece of this that has come, that's been a recurring issue, I think, over the years in the legislature, which is there are members, no doubt on this committee and others, who have some misgivings about same day or election day registration. We don't have to go into what those are right now, but if you're one of those people or have ever been, this is the bill for you, because this would literally cut down on 80 and possibly 90% of same day registrants. You wouldn't need to register same day if we had AVR or automatic voter registration. So this is a way to get more people into the system earlier, not on game day, but weeks or months earlier into the system so that the screening and filtering can be done then at an earlier time. That's, I suspect, why it's been so popular and caught on in so many states of varying political complexions. That's all I have, Mr. Chair. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Representative Secretary Simon. I have one hand up. Representative Quam, you have a question.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I believe last year there was some discussion on elections, and I remember bringing up some points about some issues, and there was some doubt, and so I shared with the chair and the members the Legislative Audit Commission audit on registration system, plus the a smaller follow-up sampling. And I just want to touch on a few of the things that came out of that. One of those was verification. The author mentioned, you know, the last four of the social and a bunch of other things during her introduction, and that in election cycles, tens of thousands of bad registrations that were required to be checked by HAVA, which is the Help America Vote Act, and using a site by the Social Security Administration for that specific. It is public to see what the registration effects coming out of that, you know, bad, et cetera, deceased, et cetera. And it came down to a large quantity of bad registrations when they went to be verified. I wrote the Secretary of State a letter asking what were the results of the verification. I figured I'd get back a thing that said X number were typos. X number ended up being people that were deceased, people that were double red, you know, whatever the reasons. Instead, I got a letter back saying, we don't check that. It's up to the counties. So I wrote a letter to 15 counties, the largest plus ones geographically balancing ones across the state. The reply I got back from the head of the County Auditor Association indicated they didn't check that. They weren't able to do that. They didn't have access to do that. So the end result was no one was checking tens of thousands of bad registrations. So the author of the bill is saying how we have this robust verification check and included the last four of the social, which is part of the verification that isn't being checked, because if it comes back bad, no one is watchdogging it. During the sampling, after it came up in testimony in the committee, and they redid some of the verification the auditor did, the sampling found illegal voting, of which there were several convictions for people utilizing the same address, and a lot of counties that were ignoring flagged registrations of people that went through the system. They were flagged as being a bad registration. They still got the vote. So I don't see in this bill anything improving the verification and the citizens' understanding of a robust system, because it doesn't address any of these issues that have been documented by the Legislative Audit Commission, by testimony and committee hearings, and by actually the counties and the Secretary of State. So I have grave concerns. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I didn't really hear a question there. It was more of a statement, unless I heard wrong, but which is possible. So Representative New Brindley, you had a question. I see your hands up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have two questions. The first one is for Secretary Simon. And my question would be, you used the figure that this law would handle 80 to 90% of same-day registrations. And I'm wondering if you can tell us where that figure comes from.
Secretary Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative New Brindley. It's an estimate based on the experience in other states, and we've talked about this among the other secretaries of state, Republicans and Democrats. For the states that have same-day voter registration, a drastic, I mean really drastic, reduction in those registering same-day, and it stands to reason. It makes sense. You wouldn't have to if you were already in the system. If the process had been started automatically, there would be very little reason for most people, the vast majority, to have to go into the polling place. So if someone, renewed their driver's license or perhaps had another interaction with government services, it could be the DNR, it could be someone else, that would already have been done for them. So someone who had changed their name due to marriage or divorce or something else, someone who had moved recently, they wouldn't have to do it. So that's been the experience in other states. It's a rough estimate. I can't say what the precise number would be. But in other states, there has been a drastic, huge fall off in same-day registrants because those folks are getting into the system much, much earlier, weeks, months, sometimes many months before an election.
Representative New Brindley.
Mr. Chair, as just a follow-up to that, in those other states that have that same-day registration, do they also have provisional balloting with their same-day registration?
Secretary Simon.
Mr. Chair and Representative New Brindley, I suspect some do and some don't. Just a point on provisional balloting, and we've had this discussion in this committee. Remember, when Congress passed the National Voter Registration Act in 1993, Minnesota was explicitly and specifically exempted from that requirement. So when people say, oh my goodness, such and such number of states have provisional balloting, and we can have the good faith argument about whether it's a good idea or a bad idea, but this idea that so many states have it, that's because Minnesota was formally and explicitly exempted from that requirement.
Representative New Brindley.
Mr. Chair, thank you. It's actually really concerning that Minnesota was explicitly exempted from a really critical provision. And in fact, every other state with same-day registration also has provisional ballots. We are the only state that is exempted from that. We are the only state that does not have provisional ballots with same-day registration. And so I guess I would ask Representative Bonner, you've talked about how robust the verification process is on this. Would you be open, well, I should say not would you be open, will you amend language into this bill to ensure that same robust verification of same-day registrants?
Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Certainly, Representative Brindley, that is a conversation we could have offline, but I would certainly, like anything else, want to review what those details would look like and before entertaining that idea.
Mr. Chair.
Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So to be clear, we've just been told, no, we're not going to do that because we actually like same-day registrations without provisional ballots and without verification. Is there a current fiscal note on this? There's clearly a cost, and I didn't see a current fiscal note in the packet.
My understanding is there's a fiscal note that is being revised, and that's why we didn't include it. We're going to lay this bill over when we get the updated fiscal note. We will then revisit this bill.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Nash, welcome.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. So Representative Brindley asked my question regarding the fiscal note. I think that's important for us to get to because this sounds expensive. I guess my question is, I guess first to the Secretary of State and then to the author, given that you would like to tie this to signing up for a driver's license or perhaps a state ID, it seems logical that you must also support the use of that driver's license or ID to go to the polling place and show that you are indeed that person. So if you would answer that question for us, because you know, if we're going to usher in voter ID through this, I think you might have some greater levels of support than you might realize. So if the secretary would go down that road first and then the author.
Secretary Simon. Secretary Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Nash. I appreciate the question. So under Minnesota law, in order to even get into the system, you have to show two things. You are who you say you are, and you live where you say you live, not one or the other, but both. But Minnesota law is pretty forgiving and generous about what you can use to show those things, not just a state issue, government issued photo ID. So I support the system that we have. It has served us well. I think Minnesota voters themselves, when the question was put to them, agreed. So the system we have has worked well. And the fact is that it's been safe and it's been secure. And I think that's an important thing to realize. I know that there's talk in this hearing, and there has been periodically, about provisional balloting. The only other thing I would say about provisional balloting that's important to point out is it's like saying you drive a vehicle. Provisional balloting comes in many shapes, sizes, flavors, and types. So when someone says provisional balloting, I need to know at least, and I think committee members should want to know what that really means. And the proposals that we've seen in the Minnesota legislature, for as far as I can remember, are really limiting, are strenuous, and would tend to drastically reduce access for folks. So it all depends what you mean by provisional balloting. It's like saying you drive a vehicle. Is that a car? Is it a truck? Is it a scooter? Is it a motorcycle? There are many different flavors of provisional balloting, but Minnesota has been explicitly exempted from that requirement, and that has served us very, very well.
Representative Bonner, you answer the question?
Sure. You know, here's the thing. I want to remind folks that under AVR, that we are already checking IDs on all of these voters. When they go into the DVS, they are looking at these. And not only are they looking at their ID, they're also looking at multiple layers of identification that make sure that this person really is who they say they are. They live where they say they live. And then you have systems on the back end to verify that they are an eligible voter. We've already done all the homework on the backside. So when someone walks into the polling place, you know that in order for them to get on that voter roll, they have to have gone through all those levels already. We're not asking an 80-year-old poll worker to guess whether or not an ID is valid or not, or whether the person really looks like they are in the picture or any of those things. We've already done that. And we've done it by folks who are trained professionals who are looking at multiple forms of identification to verify and re-verify who that individual is. And they are doing that 5 days a week, 52 weeks out of the year, 8 hours a day. So quite frankly, I would suggest that AVR is actually more reliable than Aunt Ethel. And I really appreciate her work. But frankly, I think that she that our folks can do a very robust job of making sure that all those points have been met.
You keep picking on my Aunt Ethel. Representative Nash.
Yeah, well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I feel as though I've been patted on the head in the explanation that I just got. But so I guess then we can dispense with same-day vouching if we don't want to burden Aunt Ethel. So is that something that you both support as well? And I guess to the secretary, what level of provisional balloting are you likely to support then if you don't support this? You know, I just think that you're taking something here that is not really onerous. I don't find it troublesome to check a box myself. I don't find that burdensome. And if we eventually move online for driver's licenses, which technology certainly enables, what then? You don't seem to have any allowances for that in your bill. So a couple of questions to both the testifier and the author.
Secretary Simon, did you catch those questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
That being the dispensing of vouching and what level of the secretary might support for provisional balloting.
Secretary Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, as to vouching has been a staple of our system for decades in Minnesota and has enabled a lot of people who otherwise wouldn't be able to vote, law-abiding eligible people to vote. And I know maybe Representative Nash has heard me tell the story, but just for the benefit of the committee and the public, my own father could not have voted in the 1998 Minnesota gubernatorial election had someone not vouched for him. My parents downsized and moved from the home I grew up in. They moved to a condo, but they moved in October or thereabouts. They didn't even have a utility bill at the time. So my father had to get a neighbor, someone in the precinct, to vouch for him. This is a law-abiding, tax-paying, eligible guy. And that's what happens every election. You know, and I will say there has been, until pretty recently, a very strong strain over years and decades of bipartisan support. When I was among you in the legislature, this was something that Democrats and Republicans supported. It was just a question of what the scope would be. So maybe that it sounds like that consensus is fraying, but that's something that's put us in a really good pro-access position. As to provisional balloting, as I said, it comes in many flavors. And I think provisional balloting, where it's designed to be pro-voter, can work well. For example, in states that don't have same-day registration, and here's where same-day voter registration is yet again a real advantage for Minnesota, it can be critical. So let's say you live in, I'll pick on a state, Ohio. And let's say someone in August is walking down the street and a college kid with a clipboard says, hey, would you like to register to vote? You can do it right here. Person signs up, they register to vote, and the college kid accidentally keeps it in his trunk and forgets to turn it in. Voter, thinking they're registered, shows up in Ohio on game day, on election day. The clerk says, you're not on the list. The guy says, what are you talking about? I signed, I remember it. I was walking down the street, I remember it. It was a college kid. I did him a favor, I signed the clipboard. When provisional voting works in those states, in those ways, with no same-day registration, where you can't register same day, the clerk will say, okay, let's not panic. You can vote provisionally, and we'll look into this. Maybe it's in a trunk somewhere. Maybe we'll find it, but don't panic. You're not on the list, but we'll allow you to vote provisionally. That's a pro-voter way that provisional balloting can work. It doesn't, it's not necessary in Minnesota in that instance because we have same-day voter registration. If that same thing had happened in Minnesota, somebody's walking down the street in Waconia, Representative Nash, there's a kid with a college clipboard, a college kid with a clipboard, they sign up, the college kid has it in their trunk, never turns it in, voter shows up in Waconia to vote. Because we have same-day voter registration, the person might be alarmed that they're not on the list. They remember signing that clipboard, the college kid's clipboard. But instead, the clerk in Minnesota says, hey, no problem. It was probably just a college kid that didn't turn in the thing on the clipboard. You can register right here. We just need to see some proof that you are who you say you are and you live where you say you live. So the Ohio example is a good pro-voter way of saying, hey, don't worry. You can vote provisionally while we investigate this. But the way that it's been framed and written in most, if not all, of the legislative proposals I've seen in Minnesota is, in my judgment anyway, anti-voter. It empowers people who are trying to play gotcha and could, at least if abused in the polling place, challenge someone to vote. And then the onus and the burden is on the voter, the accused, to do something, to go to a county seat within the next week, for example, which may, depending on where you live in Minnesota, mean taking a half day off of work. So it's hard to answer fully, Representative Nash, without seeing any language before me, but I would say generally, and I realize this is general, if it's pro-voter and pro-access, like the Ohio example, that can work. If it isn't, at least in my judgment, if it isn't, then it won't.
Representative Bonner, you directed it at you also. Quickly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just try to be brief on this. First of all, I just want to remind folks before the body today that we are We are talking about automatic voter registration. We are not talking about provisional ballots. That is a completely separate topic. Talking about vouching, for example, is a completely separate topic that has nothing to do with my bill specifically. So I just want to point that out and recenter us a little bit. But I will also say that, you know, just as a personal thing here, that quite frankly, the right to vote is enshrined in our Constitution. It is a right to do so for every legally eligible citizen to be able to cast their vote, to have their voice heard. So quite frankly, it seems to make sense to me that we should make every effort to make sure that that happens. And so whatever means are necessary to do that, I certainly think we should err on the side of trusting our voters and making sure that their voice gets heard.
Representative Nash.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the Secretary's admitting that automobile trunks are often a fascinating place to keep important election documents that are either found or not found. But I find this to be a troubling bill, and we don't know the cost, so that's odd that we're still awaiting a fiscal note on this. But I may have questions later, but I think this is just not something that I'm going to vote for. So thanks.
And just to remind you, we're not taking a vote on this today. We're laying it over till we get the fiscal note. Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just quickly, if Representative Bonner could explain to us how her language is different from other states who have done this. Because in other states, we have seen literally thousands of people come forward saying, hey, I am not legally allowed to vote. I should not be registered to vote. We've literally seen thousands of people. So how does your language differ, and how does it protect against that?
Representative Bonner.
Well, I'm not sure I fully understand where you're going with that, but I will say that generally speaking, when these items go over to the counties, that they are checking against the Department of Corrections, for example, to make sure that folks do not have a record, and those are maintained and updated regularly. And my understanding is that as we approach closer and closer to an election day, we also accelerate that and make sure that we are checking those. So the folks showing up on the voter rolls should have already been checked against those databases to be sure that there aren't reasons why they should not be voting. And I might add also, one of the great features of automatic voter registration is that if you get into the system, when we go through all the checks, and for any reason, we flag you as perhaps not being eligible. For example, we found that you have a recent conviction or that you have some issue on your voter record from the Department of Corrections, you will get a postcard in the mail that says, by the way, just as a handy reminder, you are not eligible to vote. And oh, by the way, just a friendly reminder, it is a felony to do so. I should also mention, by the way, that on the original form at the Department of Vehicle Services that you sign, it actually has an attestation that lists the conditions under which you may not be eligible, and you are required to sign that as well.
Representative Brindley.
So, Representative Bonner, you are required to positively sign the attestation that you are indeed eligible to vote under the language of your bill?
Certainly, I will. Sorry, Mr. Chair.
That's okay.
It is not explicitly spelled out in the bill. However, it is on the forms that you fill out when you are at the Department of Vehicle Services. And I can certainly get you a copy of that. I'm sorry, I was going to include that in the packet today. But we did not get a chance to do that.
Representative
Brindley. I'd be happy to supply it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure that was really clear. Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Koznick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and appreciate the Secretary being here. We talked a little bit, and I think it is pertinent to talk about a variety of the election issues surrounding this bill and elections. And I was wondering, do we keep track of how many same-day vouching happens during particular elections, whether it's general elections or special elections. Mr. Secretary, do you have numbers of that? I would be curious to know how many people are vouched for on a particular elections. Do you track that?
Secretary Simon.
Yes, thank you, Representative Kosnick. Mr. Chair, thank you. Yes, that number is tracked. We can get that for you. I don't know it offhand, but yes, we can get that to you from counties.
Representative Kosnick.
Well, Mr. Chair, thank you. Secretary, do you have a ballpark? You know, it's relevant to kind of this part of the conversation, and I think it'd be important for the public to kind of know at least the if you have a ballpark on that. But I'm going to guess you don't even want a ballpark, or do you?
Secretary Simon, and I think he said he doesn't have it off the top of his head, but Secretary Simon.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative Kosnick, I want to make sure I'm being accurate, so I just don't want to hazard a guess at this point, but I'll follow up with you and our office will offline and after the hearing.
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate that, you know, I thought maybe you might know it in a general sense, but accuracy is important. And I guess just to the whole conversation here, you know, with opting in, I think, you know, the sanctity of the vote and the responsibility of voting is bared on the individual to a certain extent, that we want to have individual responsibility taken for people to vote, to know how they're voting and who they're voting for, rather than just an unimportant exercise that just to check it off that, yeah, I voted. Not very informed of it. So the minimal expectation and responsibility to opt in for someone to participate in the election system rather than having to go through this complicated opt-out system just because you have taken a driver's test or applied for a fishing license. I think the sanctity of the voting and participating in our democracy demands a little bit more individual responsibility and thoughtfulness than to have to figure out how to opt out. And furthermore, you know, we know that there is some contention around election integrity, and we've heard it all from our constituents, I'm pretty sure. But as elected officials, sometimes we need to step back from the partisan talking points about it. And we really do, as this committee, should make sure that all our election laws and bills reinforce the integrity of our elections rather than diminish it and call it more into question. And so I think when we introduce bills that make it take away the individual responsibility to participate in our elections more so than what we have now, I don't know that that contributes to the sanctity of the vote and instilling the confidence that I think we all need to instill into our election systems to make sure that our constituents do have confidence that the election results are valid and not questioned, and that their vote counts as much as anybody else's. So I don't know that this bill instills that confidence. Thank you.
Representative Duskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question for the author and Secretary Simon, and that is, you know, this multi-factor authentication effort using these databases. You know, why are we not employing it fully now? Why are not agencies? Why isn't the Secretary's office working with DVS to cross-check those in the voter database now and ensuring that they're correct and removing those that are incorrect or working with them to correct them to put the right address or the right information in? Why does it take a bill that has the state, that has government actually initiating a registration for people, which certainly is something that, different people see differently on, but I wouldn't expect Representative Bonner that, or Secretary Simon, that people would disagree with the idea of using data that we already have here in the state of Minnesota to ensure the integrity in our statewide voter registration system. So I guess for both of you, why aren't we using it now? And Mr. Secretary, I talked to you about this a year or so ago. I saw actual ballots of people that had already moved, that were sent to their address, that had, and I'm 100% certain of this, Mr. Secretary, these people had moved. They were adults. They had moved, and they still had their old address in the system, and somehow ballots showed up at their parents' house. So why isn't the public safety database that Representative Bonner talked about and others being used to cross-check this? I have the same suspicions and same shortcomings here that I am seeing that Representative Quam articulated well earlier. Anyway, each of you, either of you that would like to respond.
I'm going to go to Secretary Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Breskowski. Well, I'm detecting, a couple different questions there, so I'll try to answer as best I can. So we are doing that, and we do it vigorously, and we must do it. There's no discretion involved. So we not only use multi-factor authentication for SVRS, the statewide voter registration system, but we're already on to the second generation. We've been doing it for so long that we're looking for a better way to build a better mousetrap to do multi-factor authentication even better. So we work with the counties, cities, and townships on that, and we're actively doing that right now, looking at vendors, products, ways to do those systems. In terms of databases, we, every single day, our system checks multiple databases, not just court records and the Department of Public Safety, but two different death registries, the Social Security Death Index and a Minnesota Department of Health Death Index, I think it's called. And we must do that, and we do that every day. So we do a robust business, as we must, and as every state must, in making sure that our voter rolls are clean. And I guess, in my opinion, that's what this goes to. Representative Kosnick brings up a very fair philosophical point, and reasonable people can disagree. He brings up the point, as I understand, that that's a frequent argument, that voting is the kind of responsibility that people should do as much as possible for themselves, and nothing should be automatic. I respect that point of view. But all I'm trying to point out is that a reasonable person can have that point of view, but that point of view might be in tension with some security concerns. Meaning, shouldn't we all want to get people into the system earlier? So I respect Representative Kosnick's or others who share his point of view, that, hey, this is the kind of thing that people should be doing on their own, or as Representative Nash said, that it's, hey, it's not burdensome to have to check a box. That's a legitimate point of view. I guess all I'm saying is, well, that's a legitimate point of view. Another legitimate point of view is that maybe we want to work to get people into the system earlier so that it's not on election day or the day before or the week before, but it's months before, possibly a year or more. That's it. And that's a reason. That's we can all have reasonable points of view on that. That's how I see it playing out. It's not unreasonable to have Representative Kosnick's or Nash's point of view, but then the flip side is you're going to have more same-day voter registrations, probably. But if you want same-day registrations to go down, drastically down, then there might be have to be an automated component to the system. Reasonable minds on this committee can disagree, but that's how I see the tension between the two philosophical points of view.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Secretary Simon. So the question in return, Mr. Secretary, is why do we keep seeing all these examples of people who are not screened out by the current multi-factor authorization that your office does on a daily basis? We're seeing the mousetrap is not catching very many mice is what it appears to be to us, and either that or it's not even being baited and deployed properly. I don't know. How do the people of Minnesota ensure that what you are saying you're doing and what you are tasked with apparently in law to do is actually happening? Because there's many examples that it's not.
Secretary Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Breskowski. Well, we're just going to have to agree to disagree on that. The system works extremely well to weed out people who are not eligible to vote or who once were, who are not, or who moved. Now, we got a number of reports, and I remember dealing offline our staff's Representative Breskowski about a couple incidents that you mentioned. And I can't remember whether it's your particular incident or another, so I don't want to say too much here, but there were a number of instances this last year in the 2020 election cycle where people received something at home and they believed that it was a ballot that they received. It wasn't a ballot, it was a ballot application. And spoiler alert, Representative Nash is going to or does have a bill on that subject to avoid or minimize or eliminate some of that confusion. People got something at home and we got many calls from people, well-meaning people, busy people, who see something, they assume that what they got in the mail at a right or a wrong address was a ballot. When it wasn't a ballot, it was a ballot application, and they can be forgiven for being confused. They get a lot of mail, it's got the little election symbol on it, and that sort of thing. But even if someone receives a ballot that's an absentee ballot and goes to the wrong place, we have a procedure in place in Minnesota, which means that even if that ballot were sent back, it wouldn't be counted. So even if it went to the wrong place, even if it was a ballot and not an application, someone filled it out, particularly someone who wasn't the real voter, it wouldn't be counted. And the reason for that is we have a system in Minnesota where any person who orders an absentee ballot must provide either a driver's license number or last four of a social security number. So unless the person who swiped the real voter's ballot knows not only that person's the real voter's driver's license or their last four of their social, but which one of those the voter used and is a pretty good forger of their signature, unless all of those things are true, that ballot will not be counted. So that's the ultimate safeguard. That's the ultimate backstop. I can't, Representative Druskowski, recall the precise events of our interaction, and you were kind enough to tip us off to that. I just can't remember how we resolved that. But that's the ultimate backstop. That's the ultimate failsafe, is that it's not going to be counted. They may have received something like that. It's exceedingly rare that that would happen. But if it happened, that's the ultimate backstop.
Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Secretary Simon. I won't drive this green cart a lot longer here, but I just like to say, Mr. Secretary, those ballots were real ballots. I saw them. I've got images of them in my email. I can dig them out today. And so then we go to the backstop, and Representative Bonner's bill is brought forward explaining that this is going to be a great multi-factor authorization bill to do what apparently your task to do now, which is not working. And that's the problem that we have, many of us have, with the integrity of our elections here in Minnesota. We need to get it fixed. I'm not sure that this bill does it, but we need to find out why the statewide voter registration system is not being properly updated. There should not be absentee ballots being mailed to people at addresses they were at last at 3 years ago. So anyway, thank you, Secretary Simon. Thank you, Representative Bonner and Mr. Chair.
Representative Koznick, and then we're gonna lay this bill over. Representative Koznick.
Thank you again, Mr. Chair. More to this particular bill, if the author could address. The Democrats have pushed a bill that I am considering supporting, and that would provide the ability for those in the state that do not have citizenship papers, the ability to drive and obtain a driver's license. And so I'm not gonna debate that part of that particular issue because it is a little bit more controversial. But how does your bill interact with that provision and that bill that we would be providing the right to drive on our roads to those that are not eligible to vote? How does this bill account for something like that, that if that was to also pass, how would that, how do they play in with each other?
Secretary Simon, or Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Koznick. You know, first of all, we're talking about a hypothetical law that doesn't actually exist on the books, so let's be clear about that. But let's just say it does. Okay, I'm gonna give you a thought. So when you go into the Department of Vehicle Services, again, we mentioned that the clerk is looking at multiple layers of identification. And that would often include information around citizenship. And so just to be clear, they are already doing that today. As part of the system, there are also checks in the system to check that you are, in fact, an eligible U.S. citizen, which also is a trigger. So that exists in the system today, so that would not change. if you are listed as not being an eligible citizen, U.S. citizen, it automatically shuts that down and you would not be allowed to be registered to vote. So I just want to be clear, and we could go down some rabbit holes on what that might look like about a hypothetical bill, but there are systems in or pieces in place that would address the concern that you have. And I just want to be really clear about this. I appreciate what you said about wanting to have folks demonstrate their civic duty to step up and do the right thing. But I want to clarify something. This bill essentially puts all of those layers of authentication. And so to set Representative Jaskowski's point, some of those checks and balances aren't having because people aren't in the system, right? When we check the box, we are going through those robust checks. But if we have more folks going or checking, or we change the presumption to having everybody essentially default to going through the system, we're doing a lot of the homework up front to make sure that we have those nice, crisp, clean, accurate voter rolls. So that's really important to note. But I also want to make sure, back to Representative Kosnick's point, you know, the right to vote in this country is in fact sacred, and it should be. But let's be upfront. It is guaranteed in the Constitution that we have the right to vote. The only thing this bill does is essentially ensure the security up front to make sure that we are essentially vetting, to make sure that you are who you say you are, you live where you say you live, and you are in fact an eligible voter. It does not require you to vote. You still have to step up and do your civic duty and show up at the polls. And I would encourage that anyone listening to this today to take that to heart and please go vote. Thank you so much.
Representative Kosnick.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the author. I guess what I was hoping to hear was a specific reference in your bill that addresses that issue, and I don't think it does. Maybe a follow-up on that is with the automatic registration for a driver's license is when you turn 16, I believe you get a provisional driver's license that's only valid for 2 years. And then when you turn 18, you actually get a longer term license. Did you consider, or did you just overlook, that maybe it's more appropriate to wait until someone is actually eligible to vote when they're 18 and use a driver's license renewal at that time?
Representative Bonner.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Representative Kosnick. Well, this bill actually does not specifically do that. It plays on the idea of being able to get a permit, but there are many reasons why someone might be getting a permit, including if they're 18 and above. This bill specifically focuses on folks who are 18 and above.
Representative Kosnick. And members, we can go all day. We can go up to 10 o'clock on this bill, but then we'll have to add the other bills to another evening. And I have Amanda checking that to when we can extend these. I have another evening meeting to try and get these bills taken care of. Representative Kosnick.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do appreciate the ability for the minority party to vet and have the committee discuss this. And so I guess I'll just end that. I think this bill obviously has more work to do, and so hopefully when we actually come back to vote on it, maybe there'll be some author amendments to tighten it up or show realize that it's just not a good idea and we won't bring the bill back. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Kosnick. And with that, we're going to lay this bill over until we receive the fiscal note. Thank you. The next bill we have on our agenda is Representative Olden's bill, House File 3024. And I'll move that House File 3024 be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Welcome to the committee, Representative Bolden, and present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members. I'm grateful to be with you this morning to present House File 3024. As we've been discussing this morning, voting is a sacred right of Americans, and Minnesotans take great pride in our participation in democracy. We often boast the highest voter turnout of every state in the country. Ensuring that every eligible voter has the freedom to vote is essential. All Minnesotans, Black, Brown, Indigenous, White, those from the Metro and Greater Minnesota, rich and poor, Democrats, Republicans, independents, and those with no party at all Minnesotans, all Minnesota voters deserve to have their voice heard. To that end, this bill would do two things. It's fairly straightforward and there are concepts that have been heard in this committee previously. It would create a true early voting system and create a permanent absentee voter roll. I will start with early voting. Here in Minnesota, we already have a form of early voting during the 7 days leading up to Election Day. This bill would extend that period to 30 days. Instead of filling out an application and placing it in a signature envelope to be opened at a later date away from the voter, this bill would allow the voter to sign in, similar to how we do now at the polling place, sign the voter certificate, and then receive their ballot to cast then and there. Extending this timeline and allowing voters to cast their ballot immediately gives them peace of mind in knowing that their ballot was accepted. Placing their ballot directly into the ballot counter would notify the voter of any error, allowing them to obtain a replacement ballot immediately and have their vote counted. This provides additional flexibility for voters who wish to vote in person. They can stop in whenever is convenient for them during the 30 days before Election Day. Not only is this more convenient for voters, it also makes administering elections easier for our election administrators. There would be less paperwork. There would likely be a decrease in absentee voting by mail, thereby reducing the costs of administering the election. It would be recorded in the voter's voter record that they have cast an early ballot. They would not be allowed to vote later via absentee or at the polling place. This is the same as voters who have voted absentee. It is recorded in their record and they cannot go to the polling place to cast a ballot. Early voting in Minnesota is not new. This bill only seeks to streamline the process and gives additional peace of mind and flexibility to voters. The second aspect of this bill is creation of the permanent absentee voter roll. This makes voting and administering elections easier for voters who have signed up to be on the permanent absentee list. Currently, today, Minnesota voters who sign up to be on the permanent absentee list, which is nearly 26,000 voters, are automatically sent an application before each election. They have to then send the application back to their local election office, and then they are mailed an actual ballot. And then they have to return that, and they have to do this for every election. This is an unnecessary additional step for voters who have already indicated that they wish to be a permanent absentee voter. It's also an extra step for election administrators. This bill would streamline that process and listen to the voters' indicated preference for how they wish to receive their ballot and vote. All the security and procedural aspects of the current absentee process will remain the same. I believe we need to make voting as easy as possible for all eligible Minnesotans, and this does just that. It makes it easier not just for the voters, but also for the election administrators. In summary, this bill would increase accessibility and flexibility for all eligible Minnesotans to be able to cast their vote and make their voice heard. And now I would like to turn it over to the testifiers. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that. We're sending that. Secretary Simons next.
Mr. Miller, I believe, is next.
And Mr. Then Miller.
Anna Froehling.
Thank you, yeah. That's the opposite of the direction I have it on my list here. Reverend Miller, please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Chris Miller. I live in Rochester, Minnesota. I am a retired Lutheran minister. I am testifying in support of Representative Liz Bolden's bill to ensure eligible voters automatically receive an absentee ballot prior to each election. My wife and I were active in Wisconsin politics, and when we moved here to Rochester in 2015, it didn't take long to get involved again. I've been an election judge in my community since 2016, and I haven't missed an election yet. I became an election judge because I'm concerned to ensuring everyone has a safe and secure voting opportunity. Everyone should have the freedom to cast their vote and have it counted regardless whether or not our values align. It seems ironic that some love to pledge allegiance to our flag and profess we live under God, but do not seem to think that demands liberty and justice for all, or that it extends to people of different cultures and creeds who've become citizens. I believe in one person, one vote, and I also believe that all voters and election officials should be free and safe from intimidation at the polls. It includes ensuring that registering to vote and casting a ballot are as convenient as and as accessible as possible. HF 3034 is a step in the right direction to achieving that reality. I resent that we are even having this conversation about access to our democracy and the rights of voters. I firmly believe we should be more concerned about letting people vote than making sure the right person or party gets elected. But unfortunately, that is not the moment or the culture we've created currently. Democracy is supposed to help us promote truth, justice, and the American way. Frankly, it is a mockery that our elected officials take an oath to support the Constitution of the state of Minnesota and to discharge faithfully the duties of their office, yet we are still having a debate over whether or not we should prioritize the fundamental rights of Minnesotans to a ballot. Please pass this piece of legislation and others to protect and strengthen our democracy. Amen.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. The next, I guess, do we want to do Ms. Froehling, Representative Bolda, do we do Ms. Froehling next, or do we do Secretary Simon?
Ms. Froehling, thank you.
Okay. Ms. Froehling, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Anna Froehling. I'm from Rochester, Minnesota. And thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Anna Froehling, and I'm a member and volunteer with the League of Women Voters of Minnesota and the president of the League of Women Voters of Rochester. We are a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization dedicated to empowering voters and defending democracy. I've been an election judge for the last two election cycles and have volunteered with the League for 4 years, helping voters to register to vote and learn how to vote. I am here to testify in favor of House File 3024. While many voters like to vote on Election Day, many also like the flexibility to choose to vote early if they wish. This flexibility is one of the many reasons Minnesota has a high voter participation. By allowing voters to vote when it is convenient to them, rather than all at once on a Tuesday, voters have more power over their vote and their ability to participate in political process. Additionally, true early voting gives more time to our election officials to process ballots over a longer period, rather than rushing to process them all during the 7-day period before Election Day. While we're confident that election officials can do the work in 7 days, we also know it would be a smoother process if they had more time. The League also believes, based on our conversations with election officials, that the absentee ballot delivery process would reduce administrative burden on election officials and reduce costs to towns, cities, and counties. Not only would this save taxpayers' money, but also provide convenience to voters and reduce the workload of local election officials who already carry heavy workloads. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, and thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Ms. Froehling. Next, Secretary Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'll be quick. Just on the piece on the permanent absentee ballot list, we have about 24,000 voters who are on the absentee ballot recurring mailing list. And of course, they only get an application, which is just more paperwork, more hassle, and it's really just unnecessary. And the only thing I want to point out about early voting is to put an exclamation point on what Representative Bolden said, which is we already have a form of that for about a week in Minnesota where you can vote absentee without the need for the middle person. You can just put your ballot right in the machine. This would extend it to a month. And this is very similar to a proposal from 2017 and 2018 by then Representative Kelly Fenton, who, having spent some time in Texas, was puzzled about why, in her view, Minnesota didn't have a longer early voting period. So that's all I wanted to add. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Secretary Simon. Questions? Representative Drazkowski. You're muted, Steve.
We're going to get that mute off, Mr. Chair. I was successful. Thank you. Thank you, Representative Bolden, for the bill. I want to know, I brought this up in a committee meeting last year, but in the city of Minneapolis, a very well-documented video that I was able to obtain turned over to an organization called Project Veritas that put this out in the media. 300 ballots, absentee ballots, the guy had in his car in a self-incriminating video that he made himself, and the world saw it right before our eyes, Mr. Chair. And that was just one day's worth. Of course, he went on to point out that every one of the ballots was filled out for his brother, who was running for the city council in the city of Minneapolis. Just last week, and by the way, I turned that video over early, and also some names of some of the bad guys and gals who were involved in this system of ballot harvesting in Minnesota over to the FBI, along with their names. We hadn't seen anything since. I just heard in the last couple of weeks from two friends in Minneapolis. I'd be interested if my Minneapolis colleagues are hearing this, because they never seem to talk about this, although everybody in the city of Minneapolis, it appears, not everybody, but a lot of people in the city of Minneapolis know this is going on and knew it was going on. Anyway, I just heard in the last couple of weeks, Mr. Chair, that the FBI is knocking on doors and starting to ask questions about the last election and this ballot harvesting that happened. So my question for the author is, what would this do, and how would this bill stop that type of voter fraud in Minnesota?
Representative Bolden.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the question. I will say a few words, and I would also welcome Secretary Simon's take on this as well. My understanding is the incident that you mentioned was proven to be false, and I just want to make it clear that we have safe and secure elections in Minnesota. That has been proven time and time again, over and over again. And we've spent a fair bit of time this morning speaking to all of the checks and balances and robust processes we have in place to ensure that our elections are safe and secure, which again has been vetted time and time again and proven to be true. So I think there's a lot of misinformation and disinformation being circulated and perpetuated about rumored election fraud, which I think is really dangerous rhetoric, simply isn't true. There has been no widespread voter fraud, and that has been proven time and time again. And I would welcome Secretary Simon to add anything that he would to that.
Secretary Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Drazkowski, I came in, I think, in the middle of your question, but you were talking about the Project Veritas issue from the summer. That was a primary election, not in the general election. And you and I actually spoke about that in an email about that offline. And I personally reached out to the U.S. attorney and to the Hennepin County Sheriff and law enforcement. You're hearing that there's been some movement. What I had heard was they can't comment on a pending investigation, but you might have better information than I do. And just for clarity, for the sake of the public, so we have a law in Minnesota that says no one person can deliver more than three other people's absentee ballots to the place where they're to be counted. So you can deliver your own and three others. It could be two kids and a spouse. It could be a next door neighbor, but that's it. And that's not per day. That's for the whole cycle, or for that election, three for the primary, three for the general. And that, like every other election law, needs to be enforced. Whether you like the law or not, it is the law. And we have to make sure that those are enforced. Obviously, our office doesn't have guns and badges. We can't get search warrants and do all of that. The law enforcement agencies that I mentioned are in charge of enforcing it. But if someone has broken that law or any election law, they should be held to account. That's all I can say.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Bolden and Secretary Simon. Secretary of State Simon. We definitely have to make sure our election laws are enforced, and we also have to make certain that we don't make election laws that make it easier to cheat. This example I brought up, and Representative Bolden, it is real. The video was handed to me. The individual on the video showed the 300 ballots, and he said it was 300 ballots, and he said all 300 ballots were filled out for his brother, and it was from one day's activity. Now, people don't just make up videos like that, like the left-wing media tried to dispel the realities around this. And I think law enforcement, unfortunately, now is moving on this, and we'll probably see more. But we can't put forward legislation that's going to make us more vulnerable to this type of behavior. We've got a system that is weak now, and we need one that's stronger. And it appears to me that this bill will only weaken our system and make us more vulnerable. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Bolden. Thank you, Secretary Simon.
Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to start, I mean, to be very clear, early voting would be new to the state of Minnesota. We currently have no excuse absentee voting that can be done ahead of time. But early voting is a new, this would be new to the state of Minnesota. And there are a couple of questions that I have about this. On lines 11.14 to 11.16, you indicate that county auditors must have a location for every 50,000 people. This would be a new requirement. And I'm wondering if you know yet what the cost would be to the counties. Clearly, it would not affect every county. There are plenty of counties that have under that population. But what would the cost be to the counties that would be affected by that?
Representative Bolden.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative New Brindley, for the question. So you are correct. This bill directs a polling place for one polling place for every 50,000 people in the county. So for some counties, that perhaps would be a change, and for others, it wouldn't. There is a fiscal note for this bill, but of course, that does not reflect the local cost to that. So I do not have a number for that. What I would say about that is there also will be cost savings from this bill to local counties from the change in process of the absentee process. So currently, as I said, the permanent absentee list, people who request an absentee or people who are on that permanent list are sent an application, which then has to be mailed back, and then the counties mail them an actual ballot. So that would eliminate that duplicative process. And so there may be some costs to counties to set up additional polling sites. There would also likely be a savings to counties. So in short, I don't, because of the process for the fiscal note, I don't have an exact number for what that would be for counties. It would vary.
Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Bolden. So really, any cost to the county is just conjecture. You don't know what the actual cost to the county will be, but surely they will be incurring costs. I'm wondering also, and maybe this is a question for Secretary of State Simon, I would be interested to know, of that permanent absentee list, I think you said it was around 25,000, 24,000. I forget the exact number you used. I apologize. But I'm wondering, of that list that gets sent the absentee ballot applications each year, how many of those applications come back to request ballots?
Representative Simon, or Secretary Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative New Brindley. I have to check with the counties on that. I don't have that figure offhand. And I've been told that the figure, an updated figure for 2020 was 26,000. I had misspoke. I said 24,000. It was 26,000 in 2020.
Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Secretary Simon. I appreciate that. And clearly, it was all in the ballpark. 25, 26, it's in the ballpark. I appreciate that. I think that would be really important information to have. Before we make such a sweeping change, we should at least understand how the current system is being used. Because, you know, folks are on that list, but if only half of those people are actually requesting an absentee ballot, that's
a lot of ballots that are going out for people who are not asking for them and don't necessarily want them. So we should probably have a better understanding of how that system is currently functioning before we would move forward with such sweeping change. The last, let's see here. Well, I would just make a comment and then one last question. You know, Secretary Simon also indicated that we are only allowed to turn in three absentee ballots outside of our own. We have a law on ballot harvesting in Minnesota, and he said that that should be strictly enforced. And I hope that that means, Secretary Simon, that you will also be open to creating mechanisms that they can be enforced, because right now there is no mechanism in place anywhere to verify that someone is only submitting those three absentee ballots that they are allowed to submit. Right now, there is no verification for someone checking a box saying, hey, I promise I'm only submitting three. There is no registration where someone signs in saying I am submitting three. There is nothing in place currently that would allow, we wouldn't even know. So it is literally unenforceable right now. So while I love the thought, I like that you say that for the cameras, that we should enforce it, we should also probably make laws to provide a mechanism to do so. My last question, since early voting is new to Minnesota, and on lines 11.23 and 11.24, you would require the county or the county auditor or municipal clerk to make an electronic ballot counter available in each polling place. How will that interact with the current law that allows people to actually retrieve their ballot if they decide, you know what, I made a mistake, I've learned new information, I want to change my vote? Right now, under current law, someone can go and retrieve that ballot and either go vote in person, they can submit a new absentee ballot. They have options to do that. And I would say this is critical. We've seen in Minnesota where this plays out in a very real way. I mean, in the 2008 election, tragically, the incumbent senator on the ballot lost his life right before the election. And there were thousands of votes that had already been cast for the incumbent senator that, you know, when you look at the election results, may have actually had a real impact on the result of that election. So how would that interact? How would this new law interact with being able to retrieve your ballot?
Secretary Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Brindley, I just have to say, I need to say for the record that what you just said about the three-person limit is not true. I'll assume, I'll give you the benefit of the doubt that you misspoke. In every city, in every township, in every county of every kind in Minnesota, there is a log requirement. When you bring in three or two or one other person's ballot, you have to log. You have to log in your name, your address, and who the voters are that you brought in. So it's not true. We do vigorously enforce that, and we have a log system. You can consult statute and administrative rule. In terms of how this would impact the clawback date, the so-called clawback date, it would impact it. There's no question about it. So if you set a limit for voting or absentee balloting or processing of absentee ballot, that's when the clawback period would end. So, yeah, I mean, if that's a concern to you or any other member, I can well understand that concern. If we have early voting, true early voting, then the minute that ballot is cast, it can't be clawed back. So that's a risk, but that would be a risk that the voter would have to be aware of, that once you cast that vote, there is no changing your mind. That's a fair point that you make.
Representative New Brindley, and I've got four more questioners, and we've got 20 minutes, a little less than 20 minutes, 10 minutes left before the end of the committee, and I'd like to get this one voted out, so otherwise we're just going to have some long nights.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate the sentiment, and I appreciate the willingness to have those long nights, and I promise you that I will be in committee for those long nights to make sure we have the discussions, because these bills certainly deserve the time that we're giving to them. And Mr. Secretary, I appreciate The correction. I appreciate the correction and the clarification. We have discussed this in the past, and clearly I was mistaken, and I appreciate that. We should also add a check the box on those absentee ballots that are second mailboxes and anything else to verify who is turning in those absentee ballots. But I appreciate that. Mr. Chair and Representative Bolden, there are clearly issues that need to be dealt with here. The cost to our counties, this is an unfunded mandate to our counties. To be very clear, this is an unfunded mandate to our counties. So I think that we should hear from our counties on this before moving forward. Since we don't know the costs, but it is a mandate to them, we also need to understand what the current situation is and who on the permanent absentee ballot list is indeed requesting an absentee ballot. Because if it is half of those people, we've got a whole lot of ballots going out inappropriately. And that is a massive concern that would need to be resolved before enacting any legislation similar to this. And then again, being that clawback is a significant concern. It is used by voters all the time, and removing that ability is just not a good idea. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Quam and members, before we get to Representative Quam starts, Representative Long and Representative Claiborne's bills, we're probably going to have to move those to another night. We're not going to get to those. If you're here to test, if you're a testifier here for that, you can go on your way, and because we're not going to get to those bills today. Like I said, my intent is to get this one voted out by 10 o'clock. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the author. The author and repeated people have mentioned how robust our system is. And, I've referenced how the audit of the registration system found issues of significant magnitude. And one of the things that we do have with absentee ballots that wait and are looked at, there's some checks and balances there. My understanding of this bill, that if you go in and vote days and days ahead, and a large volume are going to do that so that we don't have this big backlog of people counting absentee ballots, they're going to be running that same day. So tens of thousands of bad registrations, people come in and register, and for whatever reason, and it's already been brought up that a large quantity of these, they don't verify the bad registrations. They get flagged. But so you got, if you had a nefarious group and you've got weeks to be able to go in, register there and run your ballot through. And once it's run through, it's aggregated, and you can't later say, oh, because it's not provisional, oh, this is a bad registration. And this person wasn't legally able to vote in the state. Then they're aggregated and they're through. So a group of people could go from precinct to precinct, district to district, over weeks of time, register that day, vote, run their ballot through, and weeks later, it comes out that these were bad registrations, they were duplicate, whatever the reason is, because again, the Secretary of State and the county auditors aren't verifying tens of thousands of bad registrations. So we don't know why they were bad. So you've got weeks of people running through that could go around and make a large quantity of, votes that were not legally cast. And saying that there's a robust system doesn't add confidence to a large portion of our state population who have concerns. And we could address those concerns by actually putting in mechanisms, not decreasing the checks and balances, which this bill is doing, but actually putting in mechanisms to add confidence. Anyone that was around during the recount some years ago realized that there were some valid concerns and questions during that recount, and that's a statewide race decided by a few hundred votes. Minnesota's had a long history of occurrences of where we've got close races. And I think we owe our constituents and the citizens of the state of Minnesota activities that improve the confidence so there's not that question, that we have the integrity and surety. And I don't see this bill including anything to improve the confidence in that integrity. And so that is my big question on this is we're decreasing the integrity, and I don't want lower voter turnout because people saying, oh, my vote doesn't matter because, you know, there aren't any checks and balances. And I'm hearing that from people putting on gas and going to the grocery store. And it behooves us to make them confident and reassured about our systems. And I enjoy the intent in this bill and other bills, but I wish that we had content in them to reassure the people that, you know, come up to me. And you're there listening to the what's going on up there. You're my ears. You're my voice. What are you guys doing to make me more confident? And we owe them to add into these bills those mechanisms. And then I did have one question. Were any drop boxes used in the state of Minnesota in this past election?
Representative or Secretary Simon, that's a whole other question, but that has nothing to do with this. But Secretary Simon, quickly, I'm going to go to Jim Nash next after you answer the question, and then we are going to vote on this. It's 3 minutes left in the committee, so people are filibustering and asking long questions, and we're also getting long answers that could be answered quicker than they are. Secretary Simon.
Mr. Chair and Representative Quam, yes.
Then there were no logging of people dropping off ballots, so we don't know if they dropped off more than three. Because you understand where you said there's verification and enforcement because there's a log they sign. But if we have a drop box, a person could drop off hundreds of ballots and there wouldn't be a log there. There's no person to log them. And if we've got a camera in the background, it might be hard to tell if it's 1, 3, 5, or 10. And so that is just to illuminate areas that we could do a better job. Thank you.
Representative Nash, quickly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just quickly, we aren't filibustering. We're asking legitimate questions and having dialogue about this bill because we have concerns. That's the process that we follow. The voice of the minority, when it switches back and forth, should always be honored. So not really in agreement with you on that one. But Mr. Chair, this bill you're planning on voting out to where?
Ways and Means.
Well, Mr. Chair, we're a finance committee and an elections committee, but we're a finance committee. We don't have a fiscal note. We haven't heard from the counties.
Mr. Representative Nash, there is a fiscal note on this, and it is in your packet. It has been distributed.
All right. Well, then I'll reemphasize my point. We have not heard from the counties. I've spoken to my counties. They're stretched thin. They don't have any more bandwidth. They don't have any more finances. They don't have any of this. I'd like to hear from the counties, so I would move to lay this on the table and request a roll call vote.
A roll call vote's been asked for. A motion to lay this on the table. Mr. Brings, take the roll, please.
Chair Nelson?
No.
Chair Nelson votes no. Vice Chair Carlson?
Carlson votes no.
Vice Chair Carlson votes no. Representative Nash?
Nash votes yes.
Representative Nash votes yes. Representative Bonner?
Bonner votes no.
Representative Bonner votes no. Representative Drazkowski?
Yes.
Representative Drazkowski votes yes. Representative Elkins?
Elkins votes no.
Representative Elkins votes no. Representative Greenman?
No.
Representative Greenman votes no. Representative Cleborne?
No.
Representative Cleborne votes no. Representative Kosnick?
Kosnick, yes.
Representative Kosnick votes yes. Representative Mason?
Mason, no.
Representative Mason votes no. Representative New Brindley?
Yes.
Representative New Brindley votes yes. Representative Pawlowski?
Pawlowski, no.
Representative Pawlowski votes no. Representative Quam?
Yes.
Representative Quam votes yes. With a vote of 5 ayes and 8 nays, the motion does not prevail.
And members, I've been informed that we can't go past 10 o'clock. It's already 10:01. We will lay this over for our next meeting, or for our next meeting, not sure when. So, Jim, Representative Nash, you did get your way. With that, members, our next meeting is Monday, and at 10:30, and we will start the meeting. We will break for the for session, we'll break at noon, and we'll come back after session to complete our business Monday. With that, members, we are adjourned.